From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm ruggedly handsome anchorman Bill Curtis, and here is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. It's good to be back. We have former CIA agent Robert Baer. He was played. Oh, yes. We love the CIA. He was played by George Clooney in the movie Syriana. He'll be joining us later to share the company's secrets. But first, we were all excited by the news this week that a time capsule from 1795, packed by Paul Revere himself, was opened this week in Boston. That is, we were excited until they opened it. It's a bunch of old coins and some newspapers. This wasn't a time capsule. It was his junk drawer. Oh, look, it's Paul Revere's old batteries. Great. But you can be a part of our history. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, my name is Adam Hukins, and I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York.
Hey, how are things in Brooklyn?
They are cold here.
Yes, but, what you think.
I've heard it's pretty bad out there, but it feels like 6 degrees here today, so
six?
It's pretty cold.
Oh, I'm sorry, is that a positive number? No. What do you do there in Brooklyn?
I'm a quality assurance engineer for meetup.com.
No, wait. Oh,
no,
wait a minute. No,
way.
Wait a minute. Hold on. We got excited for a second, but Meetup is not a dating site, right?
No, it's not a dating site. A lot of people think it's a dating site. No, it's an app or a website where you can find people that are into the same things that you are.
For example, dating.
You meet up in real life.
Well, that's exciting. I think we're all excited because the idea of a quality assurance person for a dating site is like, excuse me, but she did not match her picture. What are you going to do about it?
If only.
Yeah. Well, Adam, welcome to the show. Let me introduce you to our panel. First up, the syndicated advice columnist behind Ask Amy. It's Amy Dickinson is here.
Hey. Hi.
Next up, a comedian and host at Vocalo.org. It's Brian Babylon.
Hey, Brooklyn. Yep.
And a comedian performing February 6th. At the Plaza Live Orlando, in Orlando, Florida, it's Paula Poundstone.
Hey, Adam.
So, Adam, welcome to the show. Of course, Bill Curtis is going to start the show and our new year with three quotations from this week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize, Scorekeeper Emeritus Carl Castle's voice on your voicemail. You ready to go?
I am ready.
Let's do this thing. Your first quote today comes from Senator Mitch McConnell.
The single best thing we can do is not mess up.
Senator McConnell was setting that bar high as he took charge of what?
The 114th Congress.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. You know the number.
The
very
number.
Good. Yes. Showing off a little.
Whoa.
That's right. Congress, that feeling of safety and warmth you experienced on Monday was no coincidence. Congress is back in session. And that means, yes, all members of Congress are back in Washington. They will no longer wander into your garage and nest in your car engine like they usually do on cold days. Don't you hate when you start the engine and little flag pins come out of the heater? Oh, they got in there again.
Was this a thing where Joe Biden was, like, you know, doing his game show host?
Oh, yeah. This the best day of Congress is the first day. And
yeah.
The reason is because Joe Biden, as the vice president, he's also the president of the Senate. And so he comes down and he swears in all the new senators. And as you say, he is in total Wink Martindale mode.
And he gets a lot of uncomfortable back rubs.
Well.
A lot. I've seen, if you watch a C-SPAN, you have a counter. He'll give at least 13 uncomfortable back rubs.
Actually, he got criticized for being, quote, handsy.
Yeah.
But come on, he's not a dirty old man. He's like a happy puppy. He wasn't he just thought they had treats hidden in their clothes. That's
But I'm you know what makes me mad as a patriot?
What?
Is how
Tell me, Brian.
It's how they're so chummy. It's like they're at a kegger at this little swearing in thing, but they never can get anything done. Like the best of friends on the first day, but then they hate each other like the very next day.
But all maybe right. It is just like a kegger. I mean, you've been to keggers. It's like the next day it gets super awkward.
Like you wake up like, oh man, can't believe I gave you that uncomfortable back rub.
Yeah. Oh man, right.
Yeah.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, there was talk about how they're going to try to work together. Republicans now control both houses of Congress. Republicans did not wait at all to start provoking the president. In its first 2 days, the new Congress passed an abortion ban, changes in Social Security and other conservative priorities. And then Mitch McConnell, the new Senate Majority Leader, took out a shovel and started digging for coal right there in the Senate floor. All right, Adam, we're going to stick with politics for your next quote. We're going to move on from Congress to the next election. This is about a 2016 Republican presidential contender.
You can either be president or you can jump, side hug the most hated man in football.
So that was a guy upset to see somebody destroying his presidential hopes by hugging Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. Who hugged him?
Chris Christie.
Chris Christie, yes. Chris Christie, governor of New Jersey, was seen on TV last weekend in the Cowboys owner's luxury box trying to hug Jerry Jones and failing, by the way. He missed.
That's why he'll never be vice president.
Yeah. And here's the thing. People are like, oh, my God, you know, what is governor of New Jersey doing halfway across the country rooting for the Texas team? And Christie, you know, he stood up for himself. He is a hero because unlike every other weasel politician, he will not change his sports fandom. Hillary Clinton, for example, has variously claimed to be a Yankees fan and a Cubs fan, depending on who she had to suck up to at the time, right? Christie says, well, no, I have always been a Cowboys fan. When I was a little boy, he says, I used to dream of flying around on the owner's jet and giving state contracts to a company he owns. Who can't relate to that?
On the shuttle coming in from the airport today, on the van, I heard people talking about Jerry Jones. I had no idea who he was. And now I hear you guys talking about, until today, I never heard the man's name. And now you say, like, blah, blah, blah about Jerry Jones. Why does everyone know?
Well, he is a notoriously
rich.
Rich.
How come I've never heard of him?
He got eye work done. He got some eye work done.
Yeah.
Did he have some eye work done?
Oh yeah.
What do you mean? Like wrinkles?
I don't know if he got. I know he maybe got some Botox. He got something done.
Yeah. Oh, is that true?
That's like
I thought
a guy thing.
Chris Christie just stood behind him and pulled his face back. Gives it a tighter. Because guys that are close will do that for each other.
Like bro, pull my face back, bro. Yeah.
Adam, we've talked about Congress, then the presidential race. So for our last quote, we're going to turn to very local politics.
Kirby DeLauder! Kirby DeLauder! Kirby DeLauder!
That was the headline in a Frederick County, Maryland newspaper this week after a local politician named Kirby DeLauder said he would sue them for doing what?
Using his name in an article.
Exactly right! Here's what happened. Local reporter in Frederick County wrote a story about the local politics, the county council on which Mr. DeLauder sits, used his name in the way that you do. And DeLauder freaked out. He went on Facebook and threatened to sue the newspaper because they printed his name without his permission. Because everybody knows, right, that the First Amendment to the Constitution says that the freedom of the press shall not be infringed as long as the press gets permission first. I mean, how did this guy get into office? His campaign sign said, vote for shh. The bio on his campaign website, none of your damn business. Bill, how did Adam do in our quiz?
He was Brooklyn strong. 3-0, Brooklyn.
He was
yes.
Unbelievable.
Well done.
Congratulations, Adam. They were great.
We want to remind everybody they can join us most weeks right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Illinois. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, guys, it is time for you to answer some questions about the week's news. Amy, nursery school teachers in the UK are being asked to monitor kids for a number of things, including They want them to flag kids who seem like they might be destined to become what?
Not talk show hosts. Not
God forbid.
Game show. No. oh, I need a hint. Does it involve fish?
Fish?
I don't know. I just thought of fishmongers. No.
Why were you thinking of fishmongers?
I don't know, England.
You got to call them out early. You got to begin the training the minute you see the talent.
Wait.
Remember the underwear bomber? This might be the Pampers bomber.
You mean carrying large loads in their diapers?
Can anybody guess?
ISIS?
Who are?
A terrorist?
Yes. They're supposed to be looking for toddler terrorists.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Under Britain's...
Have they ever met a toddler?
Well, that's
They're
the thing.
All terrorists.
That's the thing.
Crazy.
I mean, what is that like? Gaga, Google, Osama bin Laden. I mean,
something like that. Well, under Britain's new anti-terrorism plan, nursery school teachers are required to report 3 and 4-year-olds that show terroristic tendencies.
What is that?
This includes tantrums, always refusing to nap, and at snack time, attempting to hijack the airplane spoon that's coming in for its landing.
You are kidding me.
I am not kidding you.
Oh.
And what will they do? What will they do with the toddlers they identify as having terrorist sympathies? Sorry, son, you're being flown to Guantanamo for an enhanced time out.
It's the kids who sing London Bridges too enthusiastically.
Yeah.
London Bridge is falling down!
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is supported by Citrix GoToMeeting, connecting people and businesses in face-to-face online meetings. With GoToMeeting, you can meet and collaborate from any internet-connected computer or mobile device. It's all the productivity without having to smell that cologne that Ian sometimes wears when, you know, he gets in that mood. Share screens to collaborate in real time and turn on webcams to see each other in HD video conferencing. For a 30-day free trial, visit GoToMeeting.com today and click on the Try It Free button to get started.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and we are playing this week with Paula Poundstone, Brian Babylon, and Amy Dickinson. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
This is Sharon. I'm calling you from the Rogue Valley of Oregon, and I am close to Ashland, where I hear you were just recently a guest.
I was in Ashland. I was there seeing shows at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, which was just
very
wonderful.
Cool. Yeah, very cool. Very cool. I understand Paula Poundstone is coming out here soon, too.
I am. I think I'm in Medford, maybe.
I think you are.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I say, I'm delighted to hear from you, but it's creepy how much you know about it.
Yeah, really.
Good,
Sharon,
good.
It's nice to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Bill, what is Sharon's topic?
It's amazing, but what does it do?
So the Consumer Electronics Show that is wrapping up right now in Las Vegas, it's the highlight of the year for dorks everywhere. It's where amazing and ultimately useless products get unveiled to consumers, and we, of course, will buy them all anyway. But we read about a surprising new gadget that debuted at the show this week. Guess the real one, and you'll win Carl Castle's voice in your voicemail. First up, let's hear from Amy Dickinson.
Over the years, many useless products that nobody wants have been introduced at the Consumer Electronics Show, like fitness trackers, green energy innovations, and, of course, the smartphone itself. And now a brilliant innovator is using technology to forever change the way we hold up our pants. I bring you Belty, the so-called smart belt. The concept behind Belty is complex and futuristic. The buckle and corresponding strap either expands or contracts depending on how much food you've consumed and how much exercise you've done. Before Belty, Americans simply had to suffer with cinch-like apparatus holding up their pants. And as they got fatter, people molded themselves into sausage shapes until they eventually exploded. Belty grows as you grow. It's almost encouraging you to gorge yourself, sitting there around your gut saying, "Eat, Papa, eat."
Belty, the smart
Belty.
Belt. That we've already got the theme song. Very good. That knows when to expand based on your eating and exercise habits. Your next story of technological innovation comes from Brian Babylon.
If you think it's easy to hail down a cab, try being a black man. This is where the Bigot Buster can help. It's a new device at this year's Consumer Electronics Show that promises to trick cab drivers into stopping for black men. You wear it around your wrists like a watch or some fancy handcuffs. And when you need to catch a cab, you just press a button and it projects an incredibly realistic hologram of a white woman trying to catch a cab. Designer Ben Calhoun told the Chicago Tribune, quote, "The hologram looks just like a real white woman holding a 2-year-old kid who's holding a puppy." What cab driver is going to ignore that? Admittedly, the trials of the prototype haven't gone so great. So far, Calhoun says, most cab drivers slow down because they think you're trying to rob the white woman that's holding the toddler and the puppy. Quote, "I think it's time for us just to add a second puppy because people love puppies."
A device for black men to help them catch a cab by projecting the image of a white woman with a baby and a puppy. Your last story of a new gizmo comes from Paula Poundstone.
What tech taketh away, tech giveth back, sort of. Many computer/tablet/smartphone users have lost or never developed social skills. One-on-one conversation has become a common fear. Speak by Intuitive Tech Incorporated aims to correct that problem. Speak tells the user what to say. The user wears an earpiece and a computerized programmable bracelet with which they select from a menu of settings where they might be in conversation and relationships of whom they might be in conversation with, fellow employee, boss, casual stranger, etc. The bracelet reads the pulse of the user, and based on pulse, setting, and relationship, it identifies the feelings of the user and tells them through the headpiece exactly what to say. Conversation prompts for potential romantic interests seems to be driving the most consumer traffic to the device. Common conversation prompts are, "I feel scared." "I find you quite attractive." "I've never talked to a woman without my smartphone before, except when my mother cleans my room. And then I have my computer." Designer Rusty Frank uses the device herself. When asked how she felt about its success, however, she said, "Hold on, I have to put this thing in my ear."
All right.
Yeah.
If you were walking the floor at the CES in Vegas this week, you would have seen one of these. Was it from Amy Dickinson, Belty, the smart belt that knows when to unbuckle when you've had a big meal? From Brian Babylon, a projector for black men to help them catch a cab? Or from Paula Poundstone, Speak, a device that tells socially awkward tech nerds what to say to other human beings? Which of these is a real device soon to be on the market?
I'm going to go with number one.
You're going to go with Belty.
With
that would
belting.
Be Amy's story of the smart belt that expands and contracts without you needing to go to the trouble.
Yeah, I can see people buying that.
All right. We actually were able to speak to one of the people behind this amazing new gadget.
It will automatically loosen when you sit down or tighten when you stand up to eat a big meal. It also loosens to maintain that level of comfort.
Congratulations. You got it right. That was Casey Cassley. She's the U.S. consultant for Emiota. That's the company that makes Belty, the new smart belt. Congratulations, you did get it right. But more importantly, you have won our game, and you will be going home virtually with Carl Castle's voice in your voicemail. So
Yay.
Well done. Congratulations.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thanks. Thank you.
And now the game where we ask knowledgeable people about something they don't know. It's called Not My Job. Robert Baer was a CIA officer for decades before coming out of the cold in the late 90s and writing a series of memoirs, one of which became the George Clooney movie Syriana. His latest book is called The Perfect Kill. Robert Baer, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thanks for having me.
So we were looking into your storied career in the CIA, and even before that, what you were doing then, and we came across this quote from you. It says, "I was an Aspen hippie who smoked a lot of dope." Is that about right?
There was a little bit of LSD, too. But
oh, okay.
We don't need to get into that.
So how does an Aspen hippie dabbling in drugs end up in the CIA?
Well, I guess their security wasn't all that good.
Well, did
I sort of admitted to most of it. You just sort of make half confessions.
Well, did you dream of working with them? How did you conceive the desire to be in the CIA?
I did this as a joke.
No, really?
Yeah, I was at Berkeley and bored and called them up one day at the Federal Center. And they sent me an application, 50 pages long, and I filled it out. And I thought, they're never going to hire me. My mom was a commie. You know, she used to teach at UCLA, and I was a ski racer, drugs, the whole thing. And they hired me.
Wow.
Were you upfront about everything in your 50-page application?
Well, I didn't really get into the LSD stuff. But, you know, this is Aspen in the 60s. Come on. I mean, this was snow capital USA. There's cocaine. Everything was there. I mean, they should have known that. Seriously, I didn't think I was going to get hired. And, you know, go to the Fennel Center and there's this invite you in a hotel and call you up to the room and ask you all these questions. You like guns. You know, you want to go overseas and be a spy. And I said, no. Well, you know, I don't know. Yeah, I guess. It was, you know, I was 21 years old. What did I know?
Really? I don't know, I guess?
They called me and they said, can you be in Washington in 2 weeks? And I said, I could be there next week. And in 3 months, I was jumping out of an airplane with a machine gun. And by then, I figured that was serious.
Yeah.
Wow. So it was only 3 months of training before you were jumping out
of an
airplane with a machine gun?
They did it right away. They kicked a night jump, too, and firing guns and blowing stuff up.
It's interesting because usually on the few occasions I've talked to intelligence agents, they all sort of chuckle and say, oh, no, it's nothing like you see in the movies. You sound like you could
it's
be
like
in
that.
A movie, like downhill ski racer, bon vivant drug user from Aspen, secretly a spy who jumps out of planes with machine guns. I mean, at what point, was there a point, was it like when you were jumping out of the airplanes or when you said to yourself, I actually like this? Because you were in the company for like, what, 3 decades, right?
Yeah, you know, it was more like, what in God's name am I doing here?
Yeah.
When I tried to assassinate Saddam Hussein and I was up there and there's shells going back and forth and it was in my REI jacket holding a Kalashnikov watch in the middle of a battle and then almost getting indicted by the FBI for attempted murder of Saddam Hussein, then I really was asking myself, what am I doing here?
Wait a minute. You just said that real casual.
Wait, they're all right, the good guys.
Let's slow down and take this beat by beat. So hang with me here. So when was this exactly?
This was 1995.
1995, so post-Gulf War.
Yeah, I was sent to Iraq to get rid of Saddam Hussein. And I didn't have all the paperwork done completely, but I said I was close enough, so I launched. And no one had told the White House or the FBI, so when I came back, you know, the FBI sort of met me at the airport, and my whole team.
So they, presumably they let you go.
Yeah, I have a letter of declination declining to prosecute me for murder. It's sort of, you know, a lot of people have brag walls, but I got one of these.
That's pretty cool. So, Robert, I just have to ask quick, did you have any, like, cool gadgets?
Oh, I had a lot of them. They were, you know, we had pens that fired, you know, silenced bullets. They were great.
Really?
Yeah,
pens that
they're called subsonic. They're chemical bullets, and they fire out of a big pen.
Can I ask you something? When you get a thing like that, when you get a pen like that, did you ever, like, just shoot through an office wall with it because you couldn't resist trying it out?
Well, there were accidents. I had my Kalashnikov was full of explosive rounds, and I like to keep a round in the barrel. But my bodyguard didn't realize that, so he was playing with the trigger while I was in at lunch or something and pulled the trigger, and the entire explosives round with the bottom of their new Toyota just completely blew it apart.
I have to say, you know, it's been a rough couple years for the CIA, and you're not really building up my confidence. let's talk about the most important thing about your career as an international spy, and that is romancing the ladies. I'm sure that happened a lot, right?
Yeah, and got you a lot of trouble.
Really?
I used to date the daughter of a KGB general, and that just flipped them out.
Really?
Oh, my God.
So she was the daughter of a general in the KGB. Did it make for, like, awkward dinners when you went out with her and her parents? So how's work, you know?
No, her mom was cool. One time I got stuck in Moscow, and she diverted an airplane for me.
Oh, my God.
Wow. That sounds like some E-Harmony. This will be...
That's... This sounds pretty great, actually, but when I asked you about it, you said it causes trouble. So what trouble did you get into?
Well, two FBI agents came out, wanted to know, you know, where was this whole thing going, and was she asking me any questions? And I said, listen, you know, it's just what it looks like.
I'm in love, bro.
Yeah, I'm in love.
It looks like either the greatest or the stupidest romantic comedy film ever. Did you, during any of this, have a code name?
I had a bunch of them. I used to carry four or five passports in my pocket, different nationalities, with different names.
Really? Well, did you have a cool code name? Like, you know, I'm thinking 00 is what I'm thinking.
No, they gave you just dumb names. You know where they got them from? Got them from a Melbourne telephone directory.
Really?
Old one from 36. They thumbed through it and they said, "Here, how would you like to be this guy?"
Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah.
Did you ever have a problem remembering who you were supposed to be? Somebody said John C. and you were like,
I was up in Canada in Ottawa and forgot my alias and introduced myself in the wrong name, and they just looked at me like I was nuts. You know what happens? It's a messy business.
I wanted to ask you about Syriana, that movie which George Clooney plays a character who's not you but somewhat like you, was based on a book that you wrote about your adventures in the Middle East. What was your reaction to that?
Well, the director called me up and said, guess who's going to play you in the movie? And I said, who? And he goes, Rosie O'Donnell.
Well, Robert Baer, we are delighted to talk to you and could all day. But instead, we've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
All right, I'm ready.
Well, you've been tapping our phones all week, so you know we're going to ask you, Robert Baer, about bears. If you do correctly, you win our prize for one of our listeners. Bill, who is Robert Baer playing for?
He is playing for Christian Sauerbaum of Stockholm, Sweden.
All right, you ready to do this, Robert?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Well, come on. You have all the intelligence assets of the United States behind you.
That's what worries me.
I know. In 2010, a large bear raided the home of a New Hampshire family and took what before leaving? A, millions of dollars in negotiable bonds. B, a teddy bear. C, the owner's collection of Ricky Lee Jones records complete on vinyl.
The records. He took the records.
No, the bear took the teddy bear.
Aww.
That's odd because, of course, bears like tiny little stuffed adorable humans. Next question. We still have two chances here. In 2011, a California family went outside to discover that a bear had done what? A, stolen their Toyota Prius. B, drunk the entire contents of their hot tub. Or C, eaten everything in the garden except for the arugula.
Oh, it didn't eat the arugula.
You think a bear would, like, turn up its nose at arugula?
Yeah, absolutely, sure.
They do like good gas mileage.
They do.
No,
he stole their Prius.
No.
The bear stole the Prius. At 3:30 a.m.
You're making this up.
No, I'm not. At 3:30 a.m., a California homeowner was awoken by this huge noise, and he woke up, and there's a black bear inside his Prius, and the Prius is rolling down the driveway because the bear has sort of attacked the inside trying to get out, and he's ripped up the gearbox, and it's went into neutral, and now he's rolling down the driveway.
Oh, I've got a Prius. It's easy to do.
There you go. Last question, you see if you can get this one right. Here we go. Sometimes a bear just doesn't want to do something harmless and borrow your car or take your teddy bear. It's coming after you. In 2010, a Montana woman successfully fought off a 200-pound black bear trying to attack her in her house by doing what? A, reading it her collected poetry. B, throwing a zucchini at it. Or C, attacking it with a bear claw pastry held in each hand.
Arr.
The zucchini.
You're right, Robert. Yes, zucchini. And we looked this up. It is worth reading to you all a portion of the news account of the incident. Quote, the bear turned its full attention to the woman in the doorway. She retreated into the house and tried to close the door, but the bear stuck its head and part of a shoulder through the doorway. The woman held onto the door with her right hand. With her left, she reached behind and grabbed a 14-inch zucchini she had picked from her garden earlier. She threw the vegetable. It bopped the Bruin on the top of its head, and the animal fled.
There we go.
There you go. Bill, how did Robert Baer do in our quiz?
Robert Baer did 1 out of 3, and by the Langley scoreboard, that's a win.
There you go. By ours, though, sadly, it's not. However, we're very glad to talk to you, and we wish you luck with your new book, which is called The Perfect Kill, 21 Laws for Assassins. Robert Baer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks,
Robert.
Secret agent man, there you give it.
Hey, we'd like to say a quick thank you to one of our sponsors, Stamps.com. Stamps.com helps businesses avoid time-consuming trips to the post office. Like, if you were stuck in the post office over the holidays for hours and you said, I will never do this again, now you don't have to, because with Stamps.com, you use your own computer and printer to print official U.S. postage for any letter or package, and then the mailman picks it up. Or, you know, mailwoman, mail carrier. It's the 21st century. No more wasting time going to the post office or wasting money on expensive postage meters. Right now, listeners of this podcast can use the promo code WAIT, that's W-A-I-T, for a special offer, a no-risk trial plus a digital scale and free postage. Go to stamps.com, click on the microphone, and type in WAIT. That's stamps.com. Enter WAIT.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We're playing this week with Paula Poundstone, Brian Babylon, and Amy Dickinson. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. In just a minute, how could it be wrong when it feels so rhyme? It's our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That is, of course, 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Brian, according to a new report in Politico, their magazine, okay, in 2008, newly elected Senator Kay Hagan of North Carolina wanted to go use the Senate swimming pool, but she was told she couldn't. Why not?
Where's this pool?
We were wondering
behind
the same thing, but apparently it's
by the cloak
by the clothes, near the Senate gym, apparently.
No dames allowed, you see?
Well, why weren't women allowed?
All right, give me a slight hint.
Well, with this bunch, you can't really call it skinny dipping.
She wanted to go naked?
No.
No. Oh.
Joe Biden was already in there naked?
Well, that's good enough. Joe Biden, of course, had just left the Senate at that time, but she was told that she, a woman, could not go use the Senate swimming pool because the male senators like to go down there and swim naked.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
We don't need that image in our head.
Senator Think Hagan. About those cannonballs.
Yeah.
You know
Sorry.
What? Flag her.
Yeah.
Wow. Senator Hagan says that it took an intervention by Senator Chuck Schumer to end this practice. He said, look, guys, either put your pants on or I take mine off.
Well, this could either be like a scene out of like Senators Gone Wild.
Yeah.
Or like the sequel to Cocoon.
No, no, it's terrible.
Wow.
Paula, this week the New York Times reported that spas everywhere are now offering facial cleanses, pedicures, and other luxury treatments to a new segment of clientele.
Dogs.
Not dogs. Oh, we've had that for years.
Yeah.
Dog spas. No words there.
Snakes.
No? Snakes?
Yeah.
What would you,
you know, because they get the dry skin.
I know, but how could you give a pedicure to a snake?
Very carefully.
Very carefully. How could you give a pedicure to a
See?
Snake? That's a very good question.
Thank
Snakes don't have feet.
You're right. They don't.
Okay, the spas give...
So there are spas. Apparently, spas are getting new business. And these are the places, you know, the luxury places you go in, you put on a robe, you're pampered, you get your pedicure.
Oh, infants.
Close. I'll give it to you. Children.
Children.
Oh, yeah.
Children.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
All no. children are beautiful, but let's be honest, they could be more beautiful. Whether it is the Princess Facial at the Beverly Wilshire Spa in Beverly Hills, or the Boyacure, the manicure for kids. Get it? Manicure. Boyacure. It's never too early to introduce your children to crippling, unachievable standards of beauty.
Like, what can a kid exfoliate off their little faces?
Well, their skin's growing rapidly.
No.
It's
Wait.
Falling off constantly. Kids are snakes with feet.
They are.
Amy, Pope Francis is expected to draw crowds in the millions for his visit to the Philippines next week. And Manila does not have the restroom facilities or even the porta-johns to support the crowds. But there is a solution. They are asking millions of people to do what?
Hold it. Just
no,
hold it.
No. I'll give you a hint. Whether or not this works depends on the people's willingness.
No. Diapers?
To wear diapers, yes.
No.
Well, adult diapers may seem extreme, but it beats the alternative, which is exploding.
the thousands of traffic cops in downtown Manila will be required to wear diapers.
Wow.
For everybody else, it's just a handy suggestion from the government. According to the Associated Press, the plan was, quote, well received by the cops, which cannot possibly be true.
I just picture the changing stations.
Oh, yeah.
That's not going to be pretty.
They're going to break the tables.
They have to be adult-sized changing stations?
And plastic tables are coming right off the wall. You know, I'll tell you something. I'm an atheist, and this is part of the reason why. I just think any figure that causes an entire country of people to put on depends.
And that, can I say something?
We need to rethink.
A million people in Depends? Yeah. That's got to be some type of Guinness book.
Absolutely.
Something.
All you need to do is get them to admit it.
Well, I think the cops alone. It's got to be the most cops ever wearing Depends.
Depends.
Wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
Right. And don't forget the wipes.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming show in Orlando, Florida on February 12th, if you prefer warmer weather. Also, check out our How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Mike and Ian tell you about a Lego project that takes just 230 years to complete. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Brandy from Nashville, Tennessee.
Your name is Brandy and you live in Nashville?
I do.
Surely you are a country star.
Oh, God, no.
No?
No.
What do you do in Nashville if you are not a country music star, which is a shame?
I am a PhD student in theology.
Whoa! Hey!
Oh.
Brandy!
Perfect.
Oh, boy.
This really brings up an excellent point. What do you think about the Pope causing millions of adults to wear diapers?
Well, I am not a Catholic theologian, so I'll defer that to my Jesuit
Now, I should point out to Paula, the Pope is not commanding them to wear a diaper. Well, Brandy, welcome to the show. Bill Curtis is going to perform for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a big winner. You ready to play?
I sure am.
Here is your first limerick.
For our kingdom, I fought a bold fight. My Viagra addressed a big blight. Old groins can now stir. So they've made me a sir. For my pills, they have made me a... It's a hard one.
Brandy, can...
Yeah, it is a hard one. I feel like I have to get bonus points. Can you read it again?
Pleasure. Okay, for our kingdom I fought a bold fight. My Viagra addressed a big blight. Old groins can now stir. So they've made me a sir. For my pills they have made me a...
Knight!
Yes,
knight!
A knight!
Knight! Knight! Good for you.
Sir Lancelot, meet Sir Pancelot. Dr. Simon Campbell, the scientist who invented Viagra, is being knighted this year by the Queen of England, and Campbell truly is a British hero. Sir Dr. Simon Campbell, all men of the British Commonwealth salute you, but don't ask how. All right, here's your next limerick.
With Derry, I seek to combine the Loire and the Moselle and Rhine. There's much expertise in pairings with cheese. It's time to mix ice cream and...
Wine?
Yes.
Wine it is. Yes.
Yay.
Great news for people hoping to speed up their post-breakup binging. You can now overindulge on wine and ice cream at the same time. A New York dairy has invented wine-flavored ice cream, available in flavors like Riesling, Cherry Merlot, Peach White Zinfandel, and Manischewitz Hubby. Just think, within 10 hours, you could have both an ice cream headache and a hangover headache.
I don't know.
A lot of drunks were already doing it.
Yeah.
That's true.
All right, here is your last limerick.
Mr. Bubbles won't swim with his old swish. To his wet vet, I go with a bold wish. We pin down his fins, and the surgery begins. Tiny tools will be used on my...
Goldfish?
Yes, goldfish. Very good. Yes, goldfish. A British man has paid his vet about $500 to perform life-saving surgery on his beloved but constipated goldfish. Now, you may question, if you're a sane person, spending roughly the cost of 2,000 new goldfish just to save one old one. But it would have been a tragic irony if the goldfish had died of constipation and then been flushed down the toilet. By the way, as far as we know, the owner did not observe the surgery itself. So it's possible the surgeon just bought a new goldfish for 50 cents and said, look, good as new. Bill, how did Brandy do in our quiz?
You know, I'm impressed. She got them all.
Yeah. Well done, Brandy. Thank you so much for playing, Brandy.
Thanks.
It is now time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Bill, can you give us the scores?
Brian and Amy each have 3. That must mean Paula has 2.
All right. Let's see. That means, Paula, that you're in third place. So
yeah.
You go first. Here we go, Paula.
All right.
Fill in the blank. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Thousands of people gathered in the Place de la République to show their support for the victims of the terror attack in blank.
In Paris.
Right. On Tuesday, Bob McDonald, the former governor of blank, was sentenced to 2 years in prison for corruption.
Yeah?
Former governor of blank.
Oh, I'm sorry. Virginia?
Right. On Thursday, the Federal Reserve reported that the value of the blank rose to an 11-year high.
The dollar?
Yes, for the first time in 5 years. The price for a barrel of blank dropped below $50.
Oil.
Right, proving once and for all that they're closely related to humans. A pack of rhesus monkeys were given mirrors and immediately blanked.
Preened themselves.
No, they immediately checked out their own butts. This week, a Chicago man had his bike stolen while he was blanking.
Chicago man had his bike stolen while he was riding it.
No, while he was at the police station reporting a stolen iPhone.
Oh, no. Huh.
Guy gets his iPhone stolen. He rides his bike to the police station. Doesn't bring his lock, so he brings it inside. Fills out his police report, hands it in, turns around. The bike is gone. And this is what he did. He turned back around, and he said to the officer, I'd like to file another police report, please. He then remained at the station until police could make sure that he also got dumped by his girlfriend and fired from his job. Bill, how did Paula do in our quiz?
Paula got 4 right for 8 more points. She now has 10 points and the lead.
Oh, very well done. That's pathetic.
All right. We have flipped a coin to break the tie. Brian is elected to go next. Here we go. Jury selection in the trial of the blank bomber began on Monday.
Boston Marathon.
Right. During funeral services this week, members of the NYPD once again turned their backs on blank.
Mayor of New York.
Right. Former Arkansas governor and Fox News host blank announced Sunday that he was considering running for president in 2016.
The Huck Huckabee.
Yes, indeed. A story in the New York Times about a harrowing adventure in the country of Kyrgyzstan had to be corrected because blank...
They spelt it wrong?
No, there is no such country as Kyrgyzstan. Pitchers Randy Johnson and Pedro Martinez were among those elected into the blank this week.
Hall of Fame?
You bet. A train passenger was relieved and somewhat embarrassed when his tweeted request for more blank was answered almost immediately by the train's operators.
Blankets?
No toilet paper.
Whoa!
A guy named Adam Greenwood was in a Virgin train. That's the name of the line in England. And he noticed too late when he was in the restroom that there was no toilet paper. What is he going to do? So he got on his phone and he tweeted at Virgin Trains, hey, I'm in the bathroom and I have a large need for some TP and there isn't any. After some back and forth with the company's social media person, a man in a suit showed up and handed Adam a rescue roll. It's an inspiring story of customer service done right, but we think the real lesson here is nobody touch Adam Greenwood's phone. So how did Brian Babylon doing our quiz?
Well, Brian got 4 right for 8 more points. Now he has the lead
with
11.
Oh, hey. So how many, then, does Amy Dickinson need to win?
4 to tie. 5 to win, Amy.
Here we go, Amy. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. Dangerous weather conditions slowed divers' efforts to recover the wreckage of the blank flight that downed over the Java Sea.
The Air Asia.
Yeah, Air Asia is all we needed. On Tuesday, Florida became the 36th state to legalize blank.
Gay marriage.
Yes. After new sanctions from the U.S. took effect, North Korea again denied their role in the blank hack.
Sony.
Right. Spectators are accusing a Washington State basketball referee of not paying attention to the game after he blanked in the middle of the play.
Fainted?
No, answered his phone. Oh. Heisman Trophy winner Jameis Winston said he would skip his last year of college and enter the blank.
NFL.
No, the monastery. No, of course the NFL. On Monday, Bess Meyerson, the only Jewish woman to be crowned blank, passed away at the age of 90.
Miss America.
Indeed. Surprisingly, a Florida man wearing a shirt that read blank was arrested on drug charges.
I'm dealing.
Even better, it said, the shirt read, "Who needs drugs? No, seriously, I have drugs."
Wow.
Fortunately, the man found a lawyer immediately after he was busted for drug possession while wearing that shirt when he spotted someone in the parking lot wearing a T-shirt that said, "Who needs a court-appointed public defender?" No, seriously, I'm a court-appointed public defender. Bill, did Amy do well enough to win?
Well, she got 5 right, 10 more points, and that means she has a total of 13.
Very well done. Does that mean that she's our champion?
She is the champion.
Oh, that's awesome.
Whoa, what a low-scoring game. Yeah,
I don't think you need to say that.
Yeah.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to tell us the first thing that the new Republican Congress and President Obama will be able to agree on. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Subaru, featuring the Subaru VX Crosstrek with symmetrical all-wheel drive and 34 miles per gallon. Love, it's what makes a Subaru. Learn more at Subaru.com. The William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at WTGrantFoundation.org. Progressive Insurance with its Apron Project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen. And the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, benevolent overlord. Philip Gotica writes our limericks sometimes more than once. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our assistant house manager is Tyler Green. Our brand new intern is Jeanette Harris-Courts. Welcome, Jeanette. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Special thanks to John Zajac and Les Dalarchik at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced every week by Eva Walchover. And Miles Dernboss. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our CFO is Ann Nien. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Mr. Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Beard of the Year Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the first thing that Congress and President Obama will be able to agree on to move this country forward? Amy Dickinson.
Oh, well, Mitch McConnell is head of the party planning committee, and the big compromise will be, does President Obama want a sheet cake and balloons for his going away party, or what?
Ryan Babylon.
They're going to agree that when the moon's in your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Hard to deny. Yep. Paula Poundstone.
Allowing naked congresswomen in the pool and lunchroom.
Well, if they agree on any of those things, we'll ask you about it, panel, on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Bill Curtis. Thanks also to Amy Dickinson, Ryan Babylon, Paula Poundstone. And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal, and we will see all of you wonderful people next week. This is NPR.